Duffy's Beer presents the morning show on Trib Live Radio featuring Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and Tim Benz. 294 Curry Hollow Road, 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com.
The Trib Live Radio Triple Threat.
He wants three. You know that's a trip. Trip. Triple.
And Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and now Tim Benz right here on Trib Live Radio.
17 for 284. 27 for 170, and a big 4 for 6 from Landry Jones when it counted the most. 79 total yards passing. What a day at Heinz Field. We're brought to you by Duffy's Beer on the Trib Live Radio Morning Show. The Steelers escape with a 38-35 win, guys. And, man, I don't know where to begin. Don't know if you feel more encouraged as a Steelers fan coming out of this by all the perseverance and the character, et cetera, or still concerned about Ben Roethlisberger's health, the future, and the defense getting shredded, which almost put them behind the eight ball with Landry at QB.
Well, I don't feel necessarily any more encouraged, but it was one of the most entertaining NFL games I've ever watched. Both teams kept trying to win it, and it looked like both teams at times kept trying to lose it. You saw a history-making performance. I mean, what amazed me the most, Tim, is I was looking up all the, you know, the career numbers for receptions and yardage for the Steelers, and I expected to see anybody from Yancey Thigpen to Hines Ward to guys Plexico Burress in recent years. Man, a lot of those records are LB Nickel, Buddy Dial, a guy named J.R. Wilburn in 1967. It just seems to me that when I was a kid, they threw the ball only when it was 3rd and 40. You know what I mean? But a lot of those passing records are from a long time ago. Steeler records, I mean.
You saw Martavis Bryant imitate Lima Swede, so why couldn't you see Antonio Brown imitate LB Nickel?
Yeah, but I never saw Lima Swede juke three players in video game fashion on a wide receiver screen at the 10.
And we never saw Jesse James block like that at any level anywhere, Penn State before here. That was him on that block, and the block right before that on DHB's block where he took out two guys as Antonio Brown was barely getting to the pylon on third down to set up that play. Yeah, back to back, those were two unsung moments from that game yesterday that deserve a lot of credit. There was a third block, too, that certainly got more play on Twitter and across the internet where D'Angelo Williams planted Aldon Smith.
But, I didn't see that.
Yeah, that was something else. I mean, you saw it, right, Josh? He basically picked him up and suplexed him, and somehow managed to not hold him in the process. It was great. It's one of the better blitz pickup blocks I've seen in a while. So there were some little hidden moments here and there. You want to talk about stats and facts and figures? The one that resonated with me before I went to bed last night after I did the postgame show, until I believe right up until the DVE morning show. We handed it right off to Randy and Bill and Mike Pursuta and those guys today. That's how long
we went. Was the official game time 3:47? Is that what it was?
It felt like the longest game that didn't go to overtime.
3:47
at Heinz Field that I've been a part of. I heard Pop make the reference to that.
I'm not even sure why. Like, why did it take so long?
The first half took forever. I remember one point Bill Phillips was sitting next to me and he goes, "You know, it's like 2:30." And it's still the first half, and I'm like, oh my God, are we gonna have trouble getting this turned around in time for the early news?
We hit the postgame show, and the first thing I do in the postgame show after Tomlin does his press conference is I go through the scoreboard. The 4 o'clock games were wrapping up the first quarter.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, there were no flags either. It wasn't like there was obvious stoppages, I guess incomplete
scoring,
passes and
injuries,
scoring. Yeah.
Incompletions, reviews, stuff like that. But the number that resonated with me was between the three quarterbacks, Carr, Landry, and Roethlisberger, there were 94 dropbacks, one sack, and Roethlisberger got hurt on it.
Wow. Isn't that something? And, you know, and they suppose they dodged the bullet there. I was looking for Dr. Chow, as you were, Tim.
Oh, Dr. Chow chiming in. I guess he's what do we call him now? 1-1-1? One correct, one utterly incorrect, and then kind of half right with Le'Veon Bell?
That's at Pro Football Doc.
Yeah, at Pro Football Doc. Couldn't get the words Liz Frank out there fast enough. I guess it's just one word, right? One word? He couldn't get Liz Frank out there fast enough to worry everybody.
Who are we talking about with Liz Frank? Was that
it
Bell?
It was Le'Veon Bell. It was 2013.
It's a broken bone metatarsal.
The metatarsals. It's one or more of your metatarsals get broken, like right at the
that popped up on a mic.
Right,
who are we just talking about that in the last year?
Santonio had it. Deuce had it. So this is, unfortunately, a bad injury if you get it.
There's one of the bad things. Josh is showing me the big block now that we were talking about.
He didn't
about
quite suplex him, but he's flattened him.
There's one of the bad things about tweeting. I miss big parts of the game when I'm typing. You know what I mean? Instead, because I should just sit there and watch. And now I'm tweeting and taking pictures and all that other stuff.
I mean, I had to go back and watch it again. This was one of those games. I have 9 pages of notes. It was just there was so much happening.
How do you pick the most important play? I mean,
how do you laminate all those before the show begins?
Yeah, an environmentalist like yourself, you're going to waste a lot of plastic.
I mean, you're right, guy. It was one of the more entertaining. I don't want to say the most entertaining. That Packers game where they won on the Mike Wallace touchdown.
Yeah, that's the one Pop brought up. Yeah,
I think that might be number one for me. But this was in that ballpark. And okay, there are all these points scored. You're tempted to say the Steelers' defense was awful, and maybe they were, but they did force 7 punts.
We don't have to say
hard.
It. Cam Hayward said it afterwards. Oh, was he hard on himself and the rest of the team?
How about Harrison? I don't know if you saw his comments to Richie Walsh afterwards, but he's like, we didn't do anything right. There's nothing to take away from this game except everything that we learned that we need to do better and that we did wrong. I mean, he was just excoriating himself and excoriating the whole defense.
Better than playing well and losing, I guess, in the grand scheme of...
Well, that's what he said. That's how he couched it.
I mean, they did force 2 turnovers, Cockrell in the end zone, and that Mike Mitchell fumble that everybody was talking about because of Mitchell's histrionics and celebration, Tim, on your postgame show. I guess they didn't lead the points.
Three
that kind of minimizes
the biggest
them.
One was on the kickoff.
Well, that on the kickoff.
I had tweeted earlier that you got to watch Roosevelt Nix cover kicks. The guy, there's entertainment in itself. I tweeted that like an hour earlier, and then he comes in and blows up that play. He's nuts, man. He gives it a little smile. He loves flying down the field on kickoff coverage.
Yeah, I like Nix, and I like the play he made, but the both of them, just you can celebrate in a fraction of a second later. Like if you wait a fraction of a second, 2 seconds later, your celebration doesn't have to be muted just because you waited. You can hoot and holler and jump and run around all the way over to the sidelines. Just make sure the ball didn't come out. I don't know why, instinctively, for those two guys, the next thought after, wow, I just leveled this SOB, why is the next thought to look at the crowd instead of look at the ground? Because since you know how hard you hit them, look at the ground to see if the friggin' football is there.
And Nix did it the same as Mitchell. If you want to rip Mitchell, you got to rip Nix for it too, right? He was up preening about
that's
that
what he's
hit.
Talking about, yeah.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
But Mitchell's getting the brunt of the criticism because we've seen it before.
Right, and he's Roosevelt got a mouth to go along with it. I've never heard Roosevelt Nix yap verbally. I sure have with Mike Mitchell.
But he might win our Frank Walker Love Player of the Game at 11:30 this morning.
Not if I have anything to say about it.
Okay. Well, that'll be discussed in a moment. We want your three takes on this one, and that might not be enough today. SportsTalk@TribWeb.com. I think, you know, Antonio Brown's performance, 17 catches for 284 yards, has got to be the top story. He totally shredded the Raiders. They had no answer for him all day, not even when Landry Jones was in. And if you want to really criticize the Raiders, why are they sending 6 on a 3rd and 2 and allowing Antonio Brown that kind of room, one-on-one coverage on the outside? Basically, the Raiders choked the game away on that play alone.
It was reminiscent of his 2 catches in the 2010 AFC playoffs, wasn't it? Not quite a touchdown, but one that put the game away. That's what I thought walking over to the post-game show. It felt like the Jets game and the Ravens game from that Super Bowl year.
But those were in tight coverage, right? This is like...
No, I just meant like the nature of the play. You know,
well, I'll bet they wouldn't have done the same thing if Roethlisberger were still in there. I think they
probably
were challenging
not.
Jones. They didn't think he had it in him. And I think they were looking for to create a turnover or a sack or a big flip-the-field play.
Yeah, Ken, the one thing that is very much buried by everything that happened after the first quarter and a half of this game is... I don't know if you thought the same way I did. I was talking to David Todd, and we were of the same opinion here, and no, it had nothing to do with clock management.
Which was pretty good at the end of the first half yesterday.
We gave a standing ovation for the clock management at the end of the first half for the Steelers, David included. But the fact that the way the Steelers moved the ball the way that they did in the opportunities that they had before, you know, midway point of the second quarter, it wasn't about Ben and the receivers beating the Raiders players. Like, the play calls beat the defense. I mean, did you notice how many times where D'Angelo Williams had half the field to run through, or Antonio Brown had half the field to run through? Like, the play call for both teams, the play calls beat the defense more so than the athletes beat the other athletes for the first half of that game.
the first half of the game. I guess, but Antonio Brown beating a guy, even if it's by a step or a half step,
well,
you got to give him credit for that. You know, like,
you know, it's
no, but I'm talking about Heath Miller catching the ball where there's no one around him for 20 yards.
Yeah.
D'Angelo Williams catching the ball where the entire half of the field is wide open because the entire
play. Look at Amari Cooper's touchdown.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, was he wide open. And I mean, there was a lot of street ball going on to me.
I think that's true, but by the half, how many catches did Brown have? You had 10 catches?
10 for 180.
I mean, that one fully extended toe tap on the sideline was one of them.
Well, here's the thing. I went back to look because I tweeted about him. Ben looked a little off to me early. Threw behind Martavis Bryant.
I thought
Bryant.
So, too.
He threw behind Martavis Bryant on a third down play. He overthrew Antonio on a long pass, and he underthrew him on another one that he caught, but he could have had a t- – so I went back and looked at that one he overthrew him on when he had that DJ Hayden beat. It was 53 yards. They were on their own 47. You know what he missed setting the NFL record by yesterday? 52 yards would have tied Flipper Anderson. If Ben hits him with that pass, he sets the all-time record for most yardage in a game.
Now,
don't
who
tell
knows
Antonio
what
that.
By
don't,
one yard.
Don't tell Antonio that.
By 1 yard.
Who knows what happened the rest of the game. That might have affected the time, and you know what I mean. Those yards might not have been available later, but I hear what you're saying.
He had 22 targets, which I read on Twitter somewhere yesterday, is in the top 10 since the stats started to be kept track of in 92.
And you know what? Today he'll be mad because he knows he's back to getting two catches next week with Landry Jones playing.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But it's as bad of a game plan that Jack Del Rio came up with as the Pitt Panthers came up with for Will Fuller the day before.
Whoa,
right?
Whoa, like, Ken, don't say that. Don't say that because Jack Del Rio is going to call you out of the stands to see if you want to cover Antonio Brown.
We'll get to your Pitt wars here in about 15 minutes, Tim. But, I mean, I'm serious. Like, how do you leave Antonio Brown in single coverage that long all day?
Well, Ken, I think you may be confusing game plan with the bodies that you have to work with. First of all, Charles Woodson was in and out of the lineup several times in the first half. At one point, they took his shoulder pads off and put him in a trunk. And we had a last-minute scratch with Carey, the other safety, that I didn't know he wasn't going to play.
That's
so
right.
for a big chunk of the first half, they're without their starting two safeties on a defense that's allowing over 300 passing yards a game anyway. So don't confuse game plans with ineptitude or ineptness. What's the word?
Ineptitude.
Ineptitude.
Yes.
There you go.
Okay, but if you have an inept guy named Amerson and he's getting torched, do you continue to put Amerson in single coverage on Antonio Brown the entire game? Knowing that he's inept, you might want to put two inept guys over there instead of one.
Maybe they're more spooked by Bryant.
You know what I think, and I'm really watching, you know, Antonio Brown closely yesterday. The thing that I think makes him, even with double coverage, though, Ken, his ability to get open is what makes him the great receiver. I mean, his hands are great. He's got speed. He's got moves. He's not going to win a lot of jump ball type catches because he's not very big. But, man, I think you could triple cover him, and he is great at running routes and getting open.
Speaking of guys that the Raiders had to play without, boy, it's a shame we didn't get to see Khalil Mack yesterday, huh?
What happened to him? Was that
Holy
Marcus Gilbert
cow.
Rising
he,
to the occasion?
He
or what?
Didn't have a tackle. Khalil Mack didn't have a tackle. And to be honest with you,
James Harrison or Jarvis Jones?
Jarvis Jones is going to be my...
Jarvis Jones recovered a fumble.
Yeah, he'll be my Frank Walker defensive player of the game because he bailed Mike Mitchell's ass out. Like, I want to thank Jarvis Jones because Jarvis Jones falling on that football spared me from taking 407 consecutive I hate Mike Mitchell phone calls if they lost that game. But Khalil Mack didn't have a tackle. And you
That's
know what?
Amazing.
Amari Cooper, who got a lot of hype coming into this game too, while he had some yards and the touchdown, what did he drop? Like three balls.
Yeah.
He did. And Carr threw the pick in the end zone. So their young guys came up young at some critical moments. Not that pick crushed the Raiders because they came back and tied the game.
You thought it would at the time, though.
Yeah, you thought it would have. And
still can. He threw four touchdowns to one interception, which is you'll keep that ratio all year.
He's good.
It was 15-3 coming in. It was a 19-4 now.
That's what I mean. Like, he's good. You knew the Raiders would put up points. You forced them to punt seven times. You caused two turnovers from your defense. Yet you gave up 35. I mean, what do you grade the defense on a day like this, where some guys didn't show up at all, as you're pointing out? No pass rush, zero. They give up the big TD at the critical time, and yet I still come away feeling good about the secondary. Somehow.
Do you remember last week when we were talking about the second half of the year and I said, I expect the defense to drop back a little. I think there's been some smoke and mirrors that they've gotten away with some games because they've come up with big turnovers, which you can't plan for or continue to count on. While I expect the offense, while now healthy, to start putting up points and the team to resemble more what we thought they'd be in September. And that's exactly what yesterday was.
Yeah, I thought we'd see this game 16 times this year.
Right. That's
this is the first time we've seen it. I thought we would see it 16 times based on what the defense looked like in preseason.
I think game types, I think, somehow, sometimes they just get away from you, Ken. You start throwing the ball over the field or you're scoring a lot of points and you think, okay, we're going to play the same way we do when it's 13-10 late in the third quarter. And you just can't do it. I think sometimes games develop their own personality. And, yeah, the defense did not play well, but I think it's different. I think everybody's more clamped down when it's 10-7 at halftime. So I don't think it's always possible. Just because you scored 35 points doesn't mean you can hold them to 17 like you have been in some of the other games.
You hate to give up a 38-yard touchdown pass, though, with a minute and 15 to go. That was like Larry Fitzgerald Super Bowl-esque.
Yeah, but the worst was allowing them to score in a minute 40 on four plays after the Jesse James touchdown. I mean, that place is rocking. You know, you talk about the timing of Renegade, and we joke about that. They play Renegade, boom, they kick off, they crush the Now, the guy's name's Taiwan. Does that mean he lies about his age? I just wanted to know that. They crush that guy on the kickoff, recover, boom, two plays later, they're up 14. I was ready to pack my briefcase and head to the locker room. I thought the game was over. And you don't even make them work for it. Make them drive 5 or 6 minutes, get a touchdown, and now the game is just about over. No, four plays, bang, they're right in there. They're behind by a touchdown.
Well, Boswell put the kickoff out of bounds. That didn't help.
Yeah.
They start at the 40.
Bring back Scobie. Bring back Scobie.
You're right. That was poor. And on the Crabtree pass, what was going on? Why was Timmons on Crabtree?
According to Charlie, what he said was they failed to get out of a look. That play was a setup from the play where Timmons made the really nice pass breakup. That they got set up on that look and they got stuck in it, and they should have gotten out. They should have called timeout, or they should have checked out of it themselves defensively when they saw it.
They sent Mitchell on a blitz. Harrison was dropping, and Will Allen went to the far side of the field to the sideline like a cover two look, and that was it. They torched them right down the middle. What a ball game.
It was funny, though. Did you watch? I said this to Batch in the postgame show yesterday, and he kind of agreed with sentiment. When you're Derek Carr, and you've now got a year under your belt, and you're playing pretty well in your second season, and you're kind of in a rhythm here, did it really feel as slow as it looked on slow motion, where you could read Carr's eyes popping out of the screen saying, "Holy shit, Crabtree's on a linebacker." Charlie basically said, yes. I mean, when you're feeling that good, it feels that way. You saw that slow-mo shot, right, where they just zoomed in right into Carr's face mask, and he's just looking. He's like, yep, that's Crabtree and a linebacker. We got a touchdown here. And he just calmly threw it right to him for six. The strange part about the way that game ended, and I have to wonder if somewhere deep, dark in the recesses of his mind that he doesn't want to talk about, if Mike Tomlin was wondering if David Todd was formulating his question already about clock management when the Raiders did exactly what everybody was asking for the Steelers to do last week, and then the Steelers helped them by committing a penalty so they didn't have to burn the third timeout before the two-minute warning.
Not to mention the third down play where they threw incomplete.
Oh, that's what it was. They threw incomplete. It was not a penalty. They might have had a penalty and then threw incomplete, or incompletion and then a penalty or something like that.
Well, it was the pick play on Wheaton, the play
that's
before.
What it, yes, that's what it was. That's what it was. Yep.
It was a false start, the pick play, and then that terrible throw to D'Angelo, which stopped the clock. Yeah.
Their two, and then they had the incompletion, and then that gave them the one that they had after the two-minute warning.
Right. Then they played Renegade again, and then they got toasted. Works once. It did not work the second time. You can't blame Tomlin for that per se, right? For clock mismanagement, that's just more of either Todd Haley not telling Landry to, you can't throw it incomplete here, or it's just Landry Jones being Landry Jones. But it was almost bad. And then again, though, when you think about it, it probably gave the Steelers more time to win it in the end. It's a good thing they screwed up. It's a good thing they allowed Crabtree to score with a minute left. Otherwise, it goes to overtime, and who knows what happens?
Well, did the thought cross either of your minds that the Raiders should have let the Steelers score?
That came up in the postgame show.
Did it?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a couple tweets about it.
Bill Belichick's the only guy I ever remember actually watching that, you know, letting somebody score so that they had some time left.
They would have had 45 seconds or so, probably.
Yeah, and the way they had been marching through them,
it's not a bad thought.
Plus, just to get into Janikowski's range.
Of course, I'm glad he went out at the one because it was a pick and pork win for me.
God.
The best thing about the weekend was Josh Taylor going 1-4 in pick and pork.
So who's in first place now?
I don't know. We haven't got the standings yet. But,
oh,
is that a beautiful thing?
I was 3-2, but I'll keep adding.
That's a great 3-2 when Taylor goes 1-4.
Since I brought up Janikowski there, Ken, they were absolutely toying with the Steelers with the kickoffs, weren't they?
It was
like taking a flashlight and throwing it on the wall to a kitten. We are blatantly effing with you right now because when they tied the game, remember they tied the game 35-35, Janikowski kicked off. I expect it to land in a Heinz Field parking lot sometime around noon after it does another orbit around the sun. Okay, he boomed the one. And the entire rest of the game, it was like
we had enough time to stop and drug a couple ladies' drinks.
We are baiting, and I mean baiting you to try to get to the 20-yard lines with Jacoby Jones. They know he sucks. Didn't they play against him earlier this year? They beat
That's
the Chargers,
true.
Right?
I forgot that was Janikowski. There's no way that was done.
They were screwing with him.
Yeah,
and they probably knew they were. That was probably the game plan going in with Dre Archer, and then they said they picked up Jacoby Jones. We're still doing it.
Yeah, he didn't show much. I mean, you got to give him more than a week, but based on his first half of the season, that's not very
encouraging. He got burned twice letting punts drop behind him that didn't make it to the end zone, but you know what? I can't stand guys fielding punts, especially a fair catch at the 8-yard line. If it bounces inside the 10, I know they don't go by that as much as they used to, but I hate when you call a fair catch deep and let it bounce. At least you got a chance of getting it out to the 20.
Hey, at least he didn't fumble. Which Antonio Brown did.
Well,
yeah,
that was lost in the shuffle. You know, that could have cost them the game.
Sure.
With all those other great numbers. And it also tells you, you know, why was he back in there taking punts late when he wasn't early in the game?
Yeah, does Frank Walker ever prosecute anybody?
No, he's a defense attorney.
I'm just wondering, offensive player of the game? Come on, Frank. Let's broaden our horizons a little bit here.
All right, let's get to some.
I forgot the biggest news of the day, by the way.
Hmm.
I met SoCal Lou.
Hi, nice.
SoCal Lou drove up from Virginia with his grandson, and they waited outside the press gate hoping they would see some of us. And I talked to him for half an hour, and Rocky Blair came in, and at the right time I introduced him to Lou and his grandson. What a great guy. I mean, just the way he comes across in his emails and everything. Really had a nice conversation, and he certainly got rewarded for his drive from Virginia, because that was a classic.
In fact, he emailed as such. He said, what a weekend. First Notre Dame beat Pitt. Sorry, guys. Then I met the infamous guy, Junker.
Trust me, after my experience with Pitt fans, I'm now the world's biggest Notre Dame fan.
Yeah, and they think you went to Penn State now. Welcome to my world.
Lou says, finally saw one of the best games ever. Only bad thing was that five-hour drive back to Virginia. Makes it worth it, though. When
five-hour drive back to Virginia. It almost took as long as the game.
Gus tweets in, guys, how much of the defensive problems are due to Keith Butler's scheme? Two touchdowns with linebackers on receivers yesterday. It's fair. It was one with the guy uncovered.
This year, though, right? I mean, it does seem like, look, I think overall he's done a great job, and his defense, I think, has outplayed what any of us expected them to. But it does seem like there have been those really blatant breakdowns on plays this year that we didn't see even when they got beat last year.
Looked like the Patriot game for a minute there, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it just, you know, was that Shazier's fault on the not that Shazier should be covering Amari Cooper, but he looked like the guy that bit there, and there were no secondary people at all. I mean, that was the most wide-open touchdown I've ever seen.
Well, you said 94 dropbacks combined, Tim, but 44 for Carr.
Mm-hmm.
Your first-round pick linebackers have got to get some pressure. I mean, I didn't see any pressure. Maybe Dupree once or twice pressured him into a throw out of bounds. But
well, I've said for a couple weeks now, haven't I, that I haven't been impressed with the linebackers. It's been all about the DNs and the secondary.
And I don't think Carr was getting it out that quick either. It's not like he's one of those Tom Brady's where it's out in the second and a half. They had some chances, and they just couldn't get home. So it makes your covers look worse. But
Batch insisted yesterday that he thinks that not only is Shazier still struggling with the shoulder injury, but the way he's approaching his angles and the way he's approaching his tackles and even the leverage in his coverage at times, he's trying to hide the shoulder. Like, he thinks it's that bad.
But how would that affect your angles? What, like, well, I don't understand what that would...
Well, like, he's approaching the ball carrier trying to... Whichever shoulder it is, left shoulder.
Yeah, you don't want to lead with that shoulder.
Yeah.
And if it's... I should know this. I don't know what his dominant side is. For example, most right-handed linebackers are going to hit with their right shoulder. If that's the way it is, and he's trying to hit with his left, that can cause you not to. Because I think in terms of flying around the field, even on the he caused the two times that I thought the game really was over was when they went up 35-21. But the way the first half ended, squeaking that field goal out at the end of the first half was great. That was like three gravy points to me. And then when Mitchell picks up that ball and returns, before I knew that it wasn't going to count, I'm thinking, oh, this is over now. The Raiders, just, that's 17 unanswered points in about 4 minutes of game time. Hmm. But, Shazier made a nice play on that to pop that out. I'm trying to remember.
Yes, he did.
Did he pop that out with his shoulder or his hand? I think it was a shoulder. I think it was a shoulder.
Matt emails the show. He says, I've got some doubts with this team still, guys, even with the Ben offense not capitalizing on good field position or turnovers like they should yesterday. They should have put that game away before he got injured. If he only misses two games, they'll be 1-1. I don't think they have a chance to beat Seattle without him. But Antonio Brown, although fumbling, had a great game, made some mistakes. Mitchell caused the fumble, but he's a jag-off. As soon as he hit Murray, he started celebrating rather than pay attention to the rest of the play. It's like every player... at least from Matt's point of view, there's a good and the bad. There's Ben. Well, he didn't put the game away even before he got injured. Buddy was great. Antonio Brown, great. All-time great. Buddy can't fumble. Mike Mitchell, probably player of the game at 11:30, but he's a jag-off. This whole team has that kind of conflicts about it.
Anything bad about D'Angelo Williams yesterday?
No, I can't say as there is.
Yeah, that's why I went with him for player of the game.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
I'm backing off my running back by committee that I was stumping for last week. That's not looking so good.
Well, still wouldn't be bad. Do you guys think they could beat I don't think beating Cleveland is a done deal with Landry Jones. I think they will, but I don't have extreme confidence that that's an automatic win. And I'm hoping Ben is back for the Seattle game. But once again, now you're going to have a guy coming back who has played one full game in 2 months.
Well, Ken convinced me with his Manziel for Pro Bowl.
I hope you
didn't
throw your numbers away among comeback games, Tim, because we got another.
I know, right, exactly. I could just add that to the list.
You don't think Johnny Football is going to carve them up for a drive or two?
Well, look, I know you saw the dawn of the next Montana during that two-minute drill against the Cincinnati Bengals on Thursday night, but... I still think they've got a good chance to beat the Cleveland Browns and improve then to 6-4. But after the bye, Roethlisberger doesn't play against Seattle. That's one I had chalked up as a loss anyway.
Yeah.
I think you're right, Tim. I think at 2-7, the Browns are still in it. I think they should start McCown. Why worry about the future?
No, that's not the part I was talking about.
You could win this division.
I agree, as you may or may not recall, I agreed with your premise of playing Johnny Manziel. What I disagreed with is how much stock you put into his upside based on a two-minute drive at the end of the first half of a game that
he was awful in that second half.
If it were me, I never would have taken him in the first place. I think he stinks. But, if you wed yourself to him, yeah, you got to play him at some point, but... All you're doing is just assuring yourself as you play him that this was the wrong guy.
Don't argue with that. Duffy's Beer, much more in Pleasant Hills, presents the Trib Live Radio Morning Show at 412-653-BEER and all their weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. Lots of emails. We'll get to them here throughout the show, but we are commercial-free in the first hour. And we're brought to you by, on Mondays, Relax the Back Solutions for Pain, which Tim Benz may have needed to dip into yesterday with some Twitter pain coming his way.
What time is it?
10:30.
That's hinting of a commercial there, even a little mention in the middle. You said we're commercial free, and now you're talking about Relax the Back. And you're not being honest.
Live reads are within the context, the framework of the show.
Thank you, Tim.
All right.
Radio professional.
Billboards.
You are. Yeah. You know the difference. Subtle difference.
So subtle the listeners aren't supposed to hear it unless one of the hosts points it out.
Exactly. Thank you, TV boy. All right. Pitt lost to Notre Dame, and I need to run the table
to
get my pizza.
This hour of Ken Laird is brought to you by...
Giovanni's Vegetarian Pizza Special, which will not happen now.
I don't know. I feel good about them running the table.
You feel good about them going 3-0 down the stretch. Huh? They got Duke, they got Louisville, and they've got Miami.
Louisville's looking much better, actually. Yeah,
none will be easy.
Syracuse tends to have that effect on people, Guy.
I believe in this Pitt team still. Now, this weekend was not a very good example. They proved they're not top 10, top 20 caliber this weekend. If they're a good team, they're clearly not in Notre Dame's class. We saw that all over the field. Tim, you had a very interesting column at our site. You want to give a Cliff Notes version of what started the emotion for you about this?
Yeah, that Pat Narduzzi can dish it out, but he can't take it. It's at TribLive.com. It's on my Twitter feed, at Ben's TribLive 970. You can see it there. It's been tweeted out by TribLive Radio's Twitter feed quite a bit. So you can read the column, and I got a ton of feedback on it from Pitt fans, and 99.9% of it was angry. But my premise was that you've got a coach here.
And that surprises you?
No, not at all. No, not at all. You got a coach here who went out of his way to take a swipe at Penn State for no particular reason, decided he wanted to take on the lobbying against Notre Dame during Notre Dame week for where they stand in the BCS, even gave a little poke in the ribs to the kind-hearted Jerry DePaula, and I understand that was largely joking, but at the same time, it wasn't. He wanted to make it abundantly clear whatever any writer, any beat writer, including Jerry, wrote, he wasn't going to pay attention to. So, okay, that's fine. But yet again, as he has often done in his post-game press conferences, you can't ask Pat Narduzzi a question about the game without it turning into a defensive response as if he's been personally attacked. I thought it was a fairly legitimate question to ask the coach, hey, coach, could you have tried anything different against Will Fuller, who just got 8 catches and 153 yards and 3 touchdowns against you? Isn't that a legitimate question?
Totally legitimate.
Yeah, I think it's a legitimate
question. It was the
story
question. Of the game. It was the story of the game.
But
They left an All-American in single coverage against Patrick Amar.
Kind of like Antonio
totally
Brown
unfair.
With the Raiders, right?
Exact clone.
Okay,
you know, except it's even worse because, you know, what's Patrick Amar? He's a freshman in college. You're putting him out there. Maybe the turf was a little better because it was the first game of the two over the weekend, but it was mind-numbingly dumb. I mean, what else can you say?
So this is that was the question. This is the response from Narduzzi when he was asked about it.
We did. We changed it up a little bit, but, you know, good football player. What are you going to do? We could have called you out of the stands, see if you could cover him, but I don't think that would help much.
What a pissy, shitty little response that was. Come on. I mean,
who asked you the question?
I don't know who it was. He was sitting 2 seats away from me. I don't know who it was. I don't know his name. But it was just a pissy little response like, yeah, the pencil-pushing media guy is going to come out. It's not about him, Pat. It's about your Division I athletes trying to cover their Division I athletes. You know, that's a legitimate question. It didn't deserve that sort of snooty little response from Narduzzi. And then there was this one, too. Actually, this one came right before it.
Yeah, we got to go back and look at the tape, and it's hard to tell. You know, we just lost our leverage. You know, we lost our leverage last week, and you give them an easy post. You know, and I don't know what the split looked like and all those things, little things that, you know, you guys won't understand anyway. But
we don't get it. It's too complicated. This is nuclear physics we're talking about here. Apparently, Pat, it's so complicated your own defensive backs don't get it.
What were your SAT scores?
Maybe you should have spent less time dropping grenades at Notre Dame and Penn State and beat writers and explained that to them a little bit better because they sure as hell didn't seem to figure it out. I think I don't know why we're all bowing at the altar of Pat Narduzzi here in the Pitt fan base. Maybe it's because it's been 8 games and he's decided to stay so far. Hey, credit to him for that.
Well, you joke about that, but they have found something with this coach.
What have they found? They found the ability to not lose in a surprise. That's what they found so far, the ability to not lose in a surprise game. They have yet to find the ability.
Well, as you know, they had a great, nice moral win over Iowa on the road.
Okay. Well, they've lost to the 3 best teams they've played, Ken.
They're a different team. If you've watched them all year, you can see it's just the way they carry themselves, their physicality, their belief. I like him as a coach. His post-game demeanor is awful. He's got a long way to go to learn how to handle the media and not come off as defensive. I think what you wrote was totally within your rights to pen. I thought it was a good column. It doesn't take away from me the belief that he's the guy for the job and they're headed in an uptick direction. And I'm sure it's going to bring recruits in. But it is embarrassing to hear him take shots and deflect and not not just, you know, be respectful to the media. You know, who cares about the media, I guess, but to your fans.
Well, a couple,
you know,
more losses and it'll be the way it was, and the only media over there will be secondary people that, you know, are just trying to break in.
I mean, in a way, they lost the conference because Carolina won again this weekend, and they're going back to noon kickoffs, so they kind of already have lost the audience, right? I mean, I think they still, it is an important finish for them. Their final three games could mean a lot for the season and perception, but most people will
I think the final three games will tell the story on whether they've made – I'm not totally convinced they've turned a corner with him yet. Tim's right. They haven't had that disastrous loss to a Youngstown State or something like that the way Paul Chryst started. But, you know, it was the same thing could be said for Franklin. They had an excellent chance to beat a ranked team and blew. They've played three good teams and lost to all three of them this year too. So they haven't. He hasn't proven he can win the big game. He's more respectful of the media afterwards, though.
But in general, I'll take it. You're going to win in the cesspool of college football. Nice guys finish last. So if he's got a little edge, if he's a little bit of a jagoff, I guess I'm willing to accept it here for the
okay, well,
the
if he's such a podium tough guy, though, you know, if you can, like I said before, call out your rivals and take little jabs at the media, then you should be able to stand tall. And when you lose a game as definitively as they lost to a better team, answer the questions that are being asked of you, which were totally legitimate, asked in a very professional manner without lashing back out at the reporter and trying to make the reporter part of the story. That whole, you should come out of the stands and you should try to cover them crap.
I've seen coaches get angry, especially after a loss. There's different, and give, I'm not going to walk away or go on a rant, but the personal attacks on writers, to me, is pretty unprofessional.
I'm not going to disagree with any of that. But it's still, it is a different Pitt team this year, wouldn't you say, Guy? I mean, they've had a little more swagger.
So far, I think so.
Compared to the Paul Chryst teams, compared to, well, Haywood was here for 5 minutes.
And I think the
minutes.
Kids on that team are great to talk to. I mean, you know, they're it's a pleasure to interview those guys. But, you have to learn everything in life. And as a coordinator, I don't even know if he had one day a week where he talked to the media all those years as a coordinator. It is a different thing. But I can even tell you from, like, you know, the minute you're finished interviewing him for TV or whatever, too, he's like Pat Bostic does a thing for us on Channel 4, and he's not even finished with his last sentence, and Narduzzi walks out of the frame of the picture. I mean, nothing to me is more embarrassing than when you're interviewing somebody, and before you can turn and throw it back to whoever you're throwing it back to or finish what you're saying, the guy walks away. It's like he doesn't have 5 extra seconds for you to at least stand there till you're finished.
Yeah, I'm sure he's busy. I'm sure he is a lot smarter than you and I are in terms of football knowledge and IQ, and he's coached and everything else, but you know, you don't have to be a jagoff and make everybody else point that out to people when you deal with them on a daily basis, because you've got to sell your program. They're not beyond him having to win over fans and media. And that's still part of this, unless he's planning on leaving after 1 year.
Well, is that a positive for all the recruits they brought in on Saturday or not? I mean, they got killed. They scored 2 touchdowns in the last 4:45. That makes it look better. But they were down early, and they were really never in the game. And half the stadium was cheering for Notre Dame. If I'm a recruit, is that endearing you to Pitt that you go to a game and half of your home stadium is cheering for the other team? I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I got on Twitter a lot yesterday from Pitt fans. He's injected enthusiasm into the program. What are you talking about? Yeah, that stadium, man, it was packed to the gills for that North Carolina game, wasn't it? I even got, the kids don't leave at halftime anymore because of Narduzzi. When I got sick during the game against UVA and I had to go home, so I left during halftime, I was walking out amongst a sea of students and there were, 2 buses already full and 2 more with students trying to get out, lines of 2 more trying to get on. They do. Like, don't create this image in your head. Because he hasn't left yet in the middle of a season and because they haven't had the usual Pitt awe-inspiring, shocking loss to a MAC school, or, you know, nearly lost to Furman, or whatever example you want me to pull out from my backside here. The loss to Navy, whatever.
Hey, Navy beat Memphis this week.
Yeah, they did.
They're pretty good this year.
But, you know, they haven't had that, so people think that they've graduated. Like, I was getting into flame wars with people over whether or not I should consider Virginia Tech a quality win. They're 4-5. I mean, come on, let's have some grasp of reality here. You have graduated beyond. You've graduated beyond the point.
It's progress.
Okay, then that's what the progress is. You're now a program that doesn't lose to shitty teams anymore. Great. You haven't beaten anybody either.
It's a step. And, you know, I do think they can win 9 games here. Now, we'll see how it goes. And Jordan Whitehead, alone has made this season fun to watch. That guy is, what a recruit that was for them to get. I don't know if, how much Narduzzi was or was not involved there, but he is a star defensively, and they're starting to use him offensively. This is one of the players in college football.
Well, if he's so brilliant, why wasn't he playing offense the first game of the year?
Yeah, that's a good question, too.
I wouldn't ask that at a press conference because I'd be told that you're just negative because you went to Penn State.
Too busy watching all that Penn State game tape.
But you don't see that very often where coaches.
No, and I don't think anywhere. And you can't do it. I don't know. You can run them to the wheels fall off, I guess. You could play them. I mean, a year ago, they were doing it in high school, a little different, but.
And they need another weapon to go with Boyd. I mean, so I think they saw a real need here recently, but I don't know if you could do that every week going forward. But
well, I think there's another perfect example, too, Ken, of I do see signs that they're making progress in that, you know, when they fell behind 45-17, it would have been real easy to just slump the shoulders, and that could have easily been 58-14 by 17 by the time it's over. But they did, you know, make some stuff happen late to make it respectable.
Here's what I would have preferred Narduzzi would say. And Avonte Maddox is a sophomore, not a freshman. I was wrong on that. But anyway, I would have preferred him said, you know what? I believe in our guys. I'm going to put Avonte Maddox, who I believe is going to be a great cover corner, out there with an All-American. It's going to pay off in the long run. It was, you know, we chose to go that route and we got beat by it. Why can't he just say something like that instead of taking the red ass and pointing, you wouldn't understand, or I'll put you out. Instead, he took it as a personal affront to his schemes. If you believe in your guys, that's one thing. Maybe in 2 years this will pay off and Maddox will be one of the great corners in college football. I wish he would have gone that route. I think in time, he'll learn that.
You want to know how you handle that question instead of trying to make the reporter feel like a piece of shit for asking it? He could have said something like, we could have had Darrell Revis back and have one more year of eligibility for him, and who knows if it would have made a difference. He's a good football player.
He could have ended the sentence that he's
a good football player.
Yep, could have done that. Just said, this guy's going to be a first-round draft pick in the NFL, and he got us today.
And I thought he was awfully quick to say, well, this game doesn't hurt us. What we're trying to do is win an ACC championship, and we're going to go play. I mean, they have to win out, and somebody's got to beat North Carolina twice. That's not happening now either, I wouldn't think. It sure doesn't look like it.
No.
That's not something I would bring up and make it sound like going to play a Duke team that got their asses kicked Saturday, too, is going to turn the season around.
Yep. I'll take your thoughts on that, of course. SportsTalk at TribWeb.com. And I want to mention one Bucco thing before we get back to the mail. Apparently there was a erroneous report that the Pirates had gotten your man guy, the first baseman from Korea. Was it Byung-ho Kim?
Byung-ho Park.
Okay. The blind posting was won by somebody. We still don't know who at this point. But C.J. Nitkowski had reported that the Pirates had won it, I guess. Was this on Brand X that he had reported this?
This is the first I'm hearing this.
And that was later shot down and confirmed now that the Pirates have not won the bid for Jung-ho Gung's former teammate.
They did put one in, though?
I don't know that for sure either, but they hadn't been ruled out. There were like 15 teams that it basically were said they didn't win the bid or they didn't submit a bid, and it looked like the Pirates were among the 10 to 15 that had, so I guess we'll get more details here to come. But I don't know Nitkowski, always a former player. He's been in the media here for a couple of years, and he obviously was wrong on this one. So, but I know a lot of people were fired up this morning at the thought of getting another Korean signee after as good as Gung had been. Byung-ho Park is, he's 29, right? He's an
older guy. Especially the position that they really need.
Oh, I guess the Twins won, I'm hearing now. So the Twins won the bid.
The Pirates got in there and got the first guy and laid the groundwork for everybody else now to go in and pay more money and take all the other good players out of there.
And they won the bid to negotiate with him. They haven't signed him yet. I don't know, would you guys have paid $12 million to bid for this player?
I think so.
The success of the first? That's a lot of money.
You're not going to get a first baseman probably as good as him for $12 million over here.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, you have to add that to whatever you negotiate with. But
$12.85 mil.
It's like, we should be allowed to get him. We should be able to get all the Korean players now. You know, Branch Rickey could have said, we're supposed to get every black player now. That's the rules. We got Jackie in here first. We should get to keep every black player that wants to play baseball. The Pirate fans are like, we should get to keep every Korean. Every one of them gets to play in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. But, you know, you think about it. I mean, that doesn't matter as far as the posting goes. But I bet you he would have been more likely to sign here because of Gung playing here,
sure.
No?
I would think.
So that's a tough thing. It's a blind post. I mean,
Gung's in town, by the way. I thought he was going home for his rehab. Josh bumped into him Saturday.
Wow, another party with a celebrity from Josh Taylor.
Know,
not Todd Haley this week.
Who is he dressed as, Todd Haley?
All right, let's go back to the mail. Mark emails, I thought the officiating was questionable in the Steelers game yesterday, guys. The roughing the passer on Shazier, which is a debatable rule or call, I guess. Some bad ball spots again. One happened near the goal line where Williams got a first down. They said he was a yard short. Do you guys agree? Also, I still question Haley why on 3rd and 20 with a few minutes left you're throwing the ball rather than running the clock out.
You know, that leg dive only came up one time.
I agree with the thing about Haley. I wondered the same thing. But, I mean, nah, he, you know, first of all, you're not going to watch a game ever where the officials aren't going to officiate a perfect game. So they spotted the ball 1 yard off. They got it right. I mean, you know, come on. I think that's nitpicking. I didn't have any problem with yesterday's officiating. Hell of a lot better than what we saw Saturday in the Michigan State game, that's for sure.
How about Plex? Oh, my gosh. Did you see Plexico Burris' tweet?
No.
Plex needs to back off Twitter whenever there's a Michigan State game.
Nebraska took them out. Wow.
Yeah, I'll admit I didn't even see the play. He said, hey, everybody. NCAA is hiring officials fresh off the kitchen table. Nobody is qualified accepting all resumes. So he's ripping them there. And then this is the coup de grace. The mother bleeping officials are deliberately cheating NCAA, bleeping cowards. Wow, Plex still got some Sparty green blood flowing through his veins, huh?
What'd you think, though, about the back to the roughing the pass? It was below the knees. I mean, it was?
I thought it was kind of above.
I thought it was borderline, but
it was
sit
close.
There and think, that's
it was
terrible.
Close.
It's a judgment call made in a split second, and I didn't think it was that crazy.
Plex says he's open to all radio shows. Would you like to call him, Ken?
Absolutely.
What a great visit that would be, getting Plex back on the air again.
Not to mention Antonio Brown just bested his all-time receiving yards record in a game. He had the mark going into yesterday.
Yeah, but he did it in a five-quarter game, too.
You always got to throw water on Plex. Just give the man his due. One more day, he was in the news. Yeah, I guess...
I was doing what Tim did then for the radio network show afterwards. He caught the ball at the 1 yard line to end that game, didn't he? They tied Atlanta in that game.
Yep.
He played a whole fifth quarter.
Yeah.
So he piled up some of that yardage, and I think the last play of the game was a long pass to him that he got tackled on the one.
Yeah, he had to come back to the ball and sort of fell forward into the ball, but his feet were on the back of the end zone, or right in front of the end line, and he couldn't bring it across the end zone.
Michigan State lost.
He got up, but he spiked it before he got across the goal. Stop spinning the football!
Nebraska won with 17 seconds left. The guy went out of bounds and came back in, but he was ruled to be pushed out by the defensive back, and they called
our former colleague Justin Rose is probably suicidal at this point after that.
I'm sure. That's just evening out from the Michigan game, though, right?
Yeah, they can believe it. They've got now. There's a coach that handled that whole situation. With class. D'Antonio afterwards said that, hey, you know, it's let the Big Ten handle it. And, you know, he didn't sit there and scream and yell that he was robbed and all this.
Maybe they can suspend the refs, too.
One more take from Mark. He says, it was nice to see D'Angelo catch some passes out of the backfield, which is what they miss most without Le'Veon Bell.
That's
good
right.
Good point, Mark.
Very good point.
You didn't drop any, right? After that really bad drop against KC?
Jeff in Illinois says, typical Steelers-Raiders game, guys. That being said, Ben has had two of the nastiest injuries this year, playing both being freaky injuries, too. Maybe he's snake bit. Like that one, I mean...
Ben has been bitten by a snake. He's out 1 to 2 weeks. could Dr. Chow see that one on the sidelines?
Fang straight to the aorta.
No, he's still questionable, as the Steelers announced yesterday when the guy had been in the hospital for, like, half the quarter. He's questionable to return.
Dr. Chow saw that as a copperhead on the field, so we all know that's a venomous snake.
The protection there was okay, right? It was just Ben kind of, there was nobody open, and he ran to his left, sort of into the sack, right? I mean, it's not that fluky.
Well, it's just kind of fluky that his foot stuck in the ground at the time that he was being fallen on from that angle.
The funny thing is, now he's getting older. Now, Bruce Arians probably lost his job in part because they were trying to keep this guy upright. Is he now reaching a stage? I think we think of him kind of as injury prone. You know how many games he's missed 11 starts in his career, which is nothing for a guy that's been around over a decade and a starting quarterback in this league. He really has been very durable. So, but my question is, this is twice now he's going to miss a chunk of time this season. Is this a sign of his advancing age?
Part of the reason
is
why.
Is what we're going to see the next few years?
I think it's part of the reason, guys, that so many times he's had injuries and then played through them, that there's been so much dialogue about Ben being hurt or he's played poorly with injuries.
Or he's talked about injuries that other people wonder if he has.
The thumb in 2004, the broken toes. What else? Well, I mean, he got hit by the car and had the appendectomy in an off season together, and that combined led to one game being missed. That was an entire off season of tracking Ben's rehab.
Yeah, that's a good point. The perception's different than the reality.
How about there was one play early, though, I forget when, he was stepping up in the pocket and he just flicked it out to Brown. Like, it was just a wrist flick on the run towards the line of scrimmage, and I thought, that's the type of play he can make at 38. You know, he doesn't need to run that far. He could just move around in the pocket and still use that ability that he's got.
Well, watch Peyton Manning right now. You want to watch a quarterback in his late 30s. He's not, you know, he might still be able to make a play like that. The amount of interceptions that guy is throwing now is is that a decision-making thing? Is that your arm is just not quite as strong as it was? And because you kind of have a thing, and I continued to play baseball till I was 56 in an over 40 league, and your mind still, it's a different thing, but I'm sure it's this way with professional athletes too. Your mind is, I'm playing shortstop, there's a ground ball up the middle, and I'm like, I got that. And then all of a sudden, it's 4 feet past the end of your glove and into center field.
And you're still standing next to the third baseman.
Yeah, that's right. I'm in foul territory. But I mean, I think your mind still, even as a professional, thinks of your body and your abilities. And I wonder, when I talk about Sidney Crosby and his cognitive issues, if he has any, if part of his tiny bit of slowing down is just decision-making based on the multiple concussions and everything. It makes a big difference at that level. A tick of a second is the difference between success and failure.
I was laughing this weekend when CCM, did you guys see that little gif that CCM put out there of him flipping the stick to Patrick Hornquist during the game, during the Calgary game? You saw that play, right?
The Crosby flip.
No.
Yeah, Hornquist lost his stick on the ice, and Sid, while backing up, flicked the stick perfectly, like without rotation, right back into Hornquist's hands.
No, I didn't see that.
And CCM said at the bottom, "See, we aren't just for scoring." And the first thing I thought is, he hasn't scored at all. Shh, you might not want to mention that. Yeah, here it is. Josh has it up here. Look at that. Okay, so he loses his stick. Sid, whoop!
Oh, that is fantastic.
Best assist he's had all year?
No, I don't know. What period was that?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if that was after it was like 4-1 or whatever.
You know what it's like when you're angry on Saturday night? Oh. There's like 9 games on at once. I don't see every play of every game. Yeah, I wish I would have been.
We'll talk about Little Penguins in the next hour. Some late night hockey on the Western Canadian coast.
Those are testing my fandom and my professionalism there, trying to stay up through those.
Ryan emails the show, 3 takes. Number one, this is the Keystone Cops of football teams, guys. I don't think we've ever seen a more talented overall 5-4 team, but that's the problem. You can't trust them. I see a wild card weekend loss for these guys. Take two, D'Angelo Williams is better than any back they've had since before Le'Veon Bell and after Jerome Bettis, not just as a backup. And number three, Tim, I called the postgame coach to flame Charlie Batch at the end, and the dipstick producer cut me off and made me look like I agreed with his bonehead support of Mike Mitchell and the Tomlin swaggin' way. Play to the whistle, you clowns, Ryan says.
Yeah, I apologize. I might have been the one that cut him off then. But, yeah, Charlie actually supported Mitchell and said, when you make a play, you're allowed to celebrate. I said, could you hold on to it for 2 more seconds before you realize the ball is on the ground? Again, I've never
been 245. What's Charlie's defense of that?
Like, you're allowed to celebrate when you make a big play, is what he was saying. And I've never been 245 pounds like Roosevelt Nix running like whatever he runs down the field, you know, 15 to 20 miles an hour, pop a guy with that kind of force and know what it feels like. I'd probably celebrate too, but I also think my instinctive reaction would be, boy, I just hit the shit out of this guy. Is the ball on the ground? Let me look. You just look for the ball and celebrate after. No one's going to remember your celebration unless your celebration costs the team getting the ball or costs you. I think I remember one celebration of note that didn't get a flag, and that was Hines Ward flapping his arms after he scored against the Eagles in 2004, doing the T.O. back to T.O. You know, every other celebration I remember because it cost the team a penalty.
Yeah, it's after a touchdown. At least it's like the play's over, you know. Mike S. emails the show. He says, Tim, I listened to your postgame yesterday. Do you get any sober callers on the program?
Yeah, but we don't let them on the air. I'm sorry, sir. Much like Derek Pouliot, I can tell you're a little intoxicated, but not too intoxicated. So,
anyway, Mike says, how does Del Rio let Charles Woodson continue to play in that game? He was injured three or four times and kept going out there. It's a good point, and, you know, on that 15-yard touchdown pass from Martavis Bryant, Woodson came over with the shoulder, like, trying to tackle with the shoulder with an arm at his side, and it led to obvious results, which was a touchdown for Pittsburgh. Their secondary must be so bad in terms of depth around those players. I mean,
you're saying it was close to Eric Dungy at Syracuse, all the concussions keep putting. You got another one. Did you see that?
No, the Syracuse quarterback.
You got another one on Saturday against Louisville. I think
no
they took him out this time, but it was like 41 to something. We were losing 41 to 20 something.
Did any of you watch any of Tony Dorsett's press conference Saturday morning?
No, how tough was it?
Well, he was coherent, but he was talking about he has good days. It was sad. It was sad to watch. I like Tony, and I used to play in his golf tournament and stuff, and he's talking about his battles with CTE, and he said he would never tell a kid not to play the game, though, that, I don't want to paraphrase exactly the reasons why, that, you know, but he said despite his issues now, he's glad he played, and he would never tell a kid don't play because of the possibility of head trauma.
Well, at least he got on the Jumbotron during Sweet Caroline. Oh, wait, no, that was Stocky. And Stocky said that he was being asked for autographs by Pitt fans, thinking that he was Tony Dorsett.
A girl asked to have her picture taken with Andrew and said, my dad has your jersey.
Oh, God. Kill a chihuahua. I got nothing to add to that.
And yes, you do.
And he took the picture and didn't correct her.
He didn't correct her?
He didn't tell her he wasn't.
Oh, Andrew, you got to take the picture and then tell them. That's how you play that. You tell them after.
Tim, I mean, there was a time, this is a lot different.
You could have at least said, you know what, sweetie, I appreciate it, but I'm not Tony Dorsett. I'm just Kervin Richards.
This isn't that's right. There was a kid that followed me all the way to my car at Three River Stadium that thought I was Vance Law. Now, you got to go back 25 years when I'm 30 pounds lighter and I have wire-rimmed glasses like Vance Law wore at that time.
Vance Law.
And this little boy had a scorecard. He said, Mr. Law. I said, oh, I'm not Mr. Law. He goes, please. And I said, I'm not Vance Law. And he starts walking with him, walking to my car. I was working at Beaver County, a little radio station at the time. So I'm walking across the street, and he crosses the street, and he's walking with me with his pen and his scorecard. And I felt so – I signed his scorecard, Vance Law. And I went to the car, and I don't know if I was I doing a good thing or a bad thing. He thinks he got Vance Law's autograph. He likes Vance Law. I don't, so whatever.
It's still hanging in his man cave.
You are Vance Law. I know.
All right, one more here in the Duffy's Beer commercial-free 10 a.m. hour. Kill a Chihuahua. Three takes, guys. The Browns may stink, but they're going to be well rested after playing last Thursday. I don't expect a cakewalk this week. Second take, Penn State may end up being 7-5. Pitt 7-5 or 8-4. Could they meet in the Pinstripe Bowl or the Quick Lane Bowl in Detroit?
I've thought about that.
And number three, health is a big
concern. Oh, boy, is Narduzzi going to be fun that week.
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh, that, I hadn't thought about that. The last bowl projection before Penn State lost to Northwestern had him going to the Holiday Bowl to play USC. That probably changed now.
Shit, you know what? I just tweeted those out. What did I do with that? I had the yesterday, I tweeted out. You can find it as I find it on my own Twitter feed here, at Ben's Triblive 970. It had the bowl projections for every team. I'll get them.
That'd
in a
be a good game. Wouldn't you think? Pitt-Penn State?
Oh,
pretty
great.
Even. I think pretty even teams.
Yes.
I'd rather see it now than next fall, to tell you the truth.
Sure.
Because Tyler Boyd ain't going to play next fall. Hackenberg will be gone. Always replace. But I think both teams might be better now than they would be then. Although Penn State should get they should have a scholarship punter and place kicker by then. God, are they getting killed on special teams?
How'd the fat kicker do?
They didn't take him. He didn't even go on the trip.
They didn't take him.
No. They had to pay extra baggage on the plane or something.
Say, like, he's so fat he's throwing off the balance of the plane.
Nah, he missed two extra points, and then the next kickoff went out of bounds last week, so they switched to a different kid.
Super toe. What's his name?
Joey Julius.
Joe Julius.
Hey, but his remark about not being a cakewalk against Cleveland, things have changed now. The four teams you got to pay attention to, you got to include the Bills in the mix now. Steelers, Jets, yeah. Bills, and Raiders. And I'm looking at this. When you look at this, here's how I got the Steelers figured to rest. I think this Cleveland game is huge. They have to win that because they have Seattle, Indy, Cincy, and Denver in a row after the bye. I don't see them doing any better in that grouping than 2-2. So you can't be 500 going into that grouping. If you could be 6-4, go 2-2 in that grouping, and finish with wins at Baltimore and Cleveland, you got 10 wins and you should be in. And I don't think that's asking too much unless, you know, seven more players get hurt next week. The team that has the really tough schedule is the Bills. Five of their next six games are on the road.
And they play the Jets this Thursday, by the way.
Yeah, and game. Since you already beat the Raiders, it really looks to me, I mean, just in general, and so much changes week to week, right now it's really a battle between the Steelers and the Jets. I don't think the Bills can survive those five out of six. They already got a win over the Raiders. So,
according to SB Nation, I found the list here. The Tax Slayer Bowl is where Penn State will go.
Where's that?
Ole Miss in Jacksonville on January the 2nd. So that is like the old Gator Bowl, right? The old Gator Bowl?
Gator Bowl was in Jacksonville, yeah.
So it's Ole Miss against Penn State, that's a pretty good game on January the 2nd. And Pitt is slated to play Cal with Goff, the quarterback,
Ooh.
Our guy, in the Sun Bowl.
That'd be good.
Revisiting
down in the West, 3-0. Texas town of El Paso.
The 3-0 game against Oregon State.
I don't think Penn State's winning another game. They couldn't gain a yard on 3rd-and-1, and they couldn't stop them on 3rd-and-15 in the final 3 minutes. So that projection's probably going to go down. I think they'll go to a stinkier bowl than that.
Why don't you design the defense? You could be #1 draft pick.
Rob Rossi was present at the Heinz Field doubleheader. He's going to be in studio next.
I saw him.
Carnage.
He had a little natty hat on yesterday. Looked like the English countryside gentleman. Did you see him?
I never think of Rossi and gentlemen in the same sentence.
Oh. I think he'll be pleased that Tim is bearing the brunt of rage this week.
No, he's mad
himself.
At me. He's mad at me because he keeps getting sucked into it. Because every tweet goes out, you and Rossi are too negative. Yeah, he's getting dragged into the conversation.
We'll cross the streams with Benz and Rossi next here on Trib Live Radio.
Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. Bud, Bud Light, and Coors Light 30-pack cans, only $18.99. Plus Miller Lite and Yingling 24-pack cans for only $14.99. Winter and Christmas beers are arriving daily. Give the gift of good cheer this Christmas with a gift card to Duffy's, your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills, online at duffysbeer.com.